time for stage direction on 95 BFM.
Yeah, and?
And it's happening now.
Yeah, and?
And it's time to listen to it.
Awesome, and?
And then the dog picked up a knife.
You're listening to Stage Direction on 95 BFM.
Like a kia ora.
Kia ora, how are we?
Pretty good.
Oh, good.
I'm just putting some, trying out auditioning a track for Underneath Our Talking.
Oh, great.
It's a new order song. It's really long.
How fitting that you'd be auditioning something during Stage Direction.
Yeah, well.
Look at that.
How about that? What other words can we use? Stage... Direct...
Stage...
Left?
Stage left, stage
you
right.
You are to my stage right?
I've
never understood it. Maybe that's something that we can get to the bottom of it in the segment.
Yes, I think so. Well, it's from the performer's perspective. So if I'm to your right in the real world as you see things, then I would be stage right of you.
Oh, right. Like so, and then the audience, dumb old audience,
sees it from the opposite side.
You're on the left.
Yeah.
Thanks for clearing that up.
I've
always wondered when someone says stage right or stage left, I never know where the murderer is coming from. So now I know.
What? That's the whole point, is that you don't see it coming.
Okay. Well, listen, I've started you off on a heck of a lot of nonsense there, but it's really nice to see you again.
It's good to be back.
And we are, of course, kicking off Stage Direction for another week. And you've been to see some shows, and that's fair to say.
I've been to see some gosh darn doozies, is what I would say.
Go for it.
So first up, I went and saw the new show from ATC, the Auckland Theatre Company, which is called Helen Clark in Six Outfits.
I love the name, and it is what it says on the tin, right?
It really is. It is. Well, actually, I counted 5 outfits.
Did you?
I did. And so what this show... And I think you could count 6 outfits, but I think one of them's kind of a cop-out.
Hot take from the outset. That's what you tune in for.
So Helen Clark in Six Outfits tells us the life of Helen Clark from her sort of teenage years at Epsom School, Epsom Grammar Girls School. I'm not from Auckland originally, so there was a lot of like humour based around making fun of Epsom Girls Grammar.
That's really niche. Yeah.
That was a bit niche for me. So
I mean,
it tells.
It's also just right off the motorway and there's not a lot going on around there. So
sure. I mean, Epsom is act country anyway, so...
Sure, yeah.
Anyway. So it tells her story from being a politically rebellious youth all the way up to sort of present day with her work at the UN.
Yeah.
But the main body of the story finishes around her three-term government. It is a show that starts off saying how, like, so it's two people. It is Jennifer Ward Leland and it is Lauren Gibson. I want to say here that it was originally Jennifer Ward Leland and Britt O'Rourke, but Britt O'Rourke had to step away from the show about a week before they opened due to personal reasons. So Lauren Gibson was brought in about a week before opening, had to learn the entire show, and it really is like, I would say it's like 70% it's her show.
Wow.
We've got, she is playing her from like, playing Helen from youth to the age of prime ministership.
Wow.
With Jennifer Ward Leland in the background as old Helen and as Helen's parents and kind of like every little character that pops in and out throughout. It's told kind of through this like dialogue with the audience where Helen is like actively breaking the fourth wall. I don't really think there is a fourth wall in this show.
Yeah.
I think that was a really interesting way of telling this story of like having this person be in control of her own narrative throughout her life and be very staunchly like believing in what she is doing.
Yeah.
However, I think a lot of this show was really heavy-handed. It was a show that was so kind of like deeply rooted in the politics of its time that I think that to tell it now, there was a lot of language that wasn't really present. This is a show that talks about like the necessity of gender equality and doesn't use the word intersectionality once.
Right.
It does. It's a show that doesn't talk about the struggles of people of color. It is a show that is like, you know, it's about Helen Clark. And I think that for what it's doing, it is telling Helen Clark's story accurately.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that perhaps it wasn't telling it very interestingly.
Right.
I think that there were a lot of things that the show was trying to do that it didn't quite go as far as it could have.
Mm-hmm.
It reminded me at times of Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Whoa,
weirdly
I didn't
enough.
Expect that comparison.
No, because it's doing a lot of like it is doing a lot of like interesting stuff. There's a bunch of like caricature throughout the show of these characters that Jennifer Woodley Lind is playing, of like mother and father and all of these like other parliamentary people.
Yeah,
and it's big performances, but it's like, I don't know, it's maybe sitting at like a 7 out of 10, where it's like, I think the show wants to go for that 10 out of 10 ridiculous factor. But it's just not quite getting there. There are points where they'll be like sat at a desk and there's a camera on them, which is projected onto the back of the stage. And the stage is like this big like steps going up and then turning and going up. So it looks kind of like a mountain.
Yeah.
So she would be have her face projected onto the screen, but I kind of didn't know why. It sort of just looked like Helen Clark was vlogging to us about like what she's kind of getting up to. And there was one point where it was used really effectively when they started like these characters outside of Helen started being quite critical of her and her when she's like starting to climb the parliamentary rungs.
Yeah.
Lauren does this thing where like she peels back her lips and gets really close to the camera, and it's this weird distorted like fisheye kind of thing happening on the screen projected on the stage, and that was really fun. That made me feel like viscerally kind of uncomfortable looking at it, and like I could feel sort of what Helen was like, you know, supposedly feeling at that time, being under like all of this flack from all of these people. But there was so much of it that just never quite reached there again. It opens with talking about like there was a biography of Helen Clark that was written, and it was like a they called it like a profile or something, and there was a whole bit about like sort of admonishing that label, like why would you just profile somebody and not like tell like their whole deep story.
Right.
And then the show kind of continues to do exactly that, and it doesn't really go very deep into it. There's a lot of like her parliamentary life that is skipped over in sort of like a monologue montage moment where she's talking about all of these cool things that she's doing, but it's not spending any time interrogating any of that. And I think that that is where some of the most interesting parts of the show could have been felt, because that's where a lot of like the conflict in her life was coming from. And I think that it was trying to do this thing of showing us like Helen Clark behind the politician.
Yeah.
But I think like if you've got a character that is so interesting because of what they did as a politician, like Helen Clark is, like she's lived an incredible life. She's done a lot. And I think that if you're not going to focus on that, you need to have a really important angle to go at the rest of her life from. And I don't think that the outfits that this show is sort of based around really carried it as much as the title suggests that it might.
And how about, do you think anything was lost in the loss of the actor that was actually going to be the lead actor?
I will say this for Lauren Gibson, that she did astonishingly well.
Great.
Like
it does
truly
sound like it, yeah.
Yeah, truly I would not have picked that she had a week to learn this role. She came in, had the presence, she had the commitment to the character, she knew what she was doing. I would be very interested to see what this show looks like a little bit later on in its season run, because I think that the performances and the portrayals are only going to get richer and only going to get deeper the more time that she has with it.
And spends with being Helen.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think that the performances were kneecapping the show in any regard.
And it is on for a wee while.
It's on for a wee while. It is on until the 26th of April, I believe. Yeah, the 26th of April at the Waterfront Theatre.
Sweet. Go and make your own mind up, of course, as always. And so next up, you saw Arthur Miller's
A View from the Bridge.
A View from the Bridge.
I did indeed.
How was it?
Really, really good.
Hey,
it feels kind of bad to just like kind of, I don't know, talk like that about Helen Clark. And now I'm gonna really praise Silo for their work on this show, because it's one of the best things that I've seen this year.
I don't mind you telling it like you saw it. That's your job.
This is so true.
Rather you than me.
Yeah, hey, you know what? Fair enough. I leapt out of my seat at the end of it. It's astonishing. It's at Q Theatre.
Mm-hmm.
It's running until the 3rd of May. It's in The Round. This is the second show that I've seen in The Round at Q Theatre this year. And I think this one does it in a bit more of an interesting way as well. It's a lot tighter. It's a lot more closed in. The stage is it's elevated. There are platforms that kind of go from the ground up and then to create these sort of like border walkways around a central like square platform, which is where the majority of the action of this play happens. And it means that every scene is so tight, like everything's happening all at once, and it's palpable. When there's tension, you can feel it because everybody is acting like within breathing space of each other. So the story for this one goes, it's 1950s Brooklyn, and there is a family of Eddie Beatrice, which is a married couple. Eddie is a longshoreman who works at the docks, and Beatrice is the housewife who looks after the house, and also their niece, Catherine, who is this young girl who's been at school. She's about to get a job as a stenographer. When two of Beatrice's cousins from Italy come around, they arrive because there's no work left to do in Italy. They say that, like, nobody's able to work, nobody's able to eat. All of the jobs that they can have in their town are, like, pushing carts up a hill to get tourists from the bottom of the town to like the top where the hotel is, and that's like it. So they've come to America to try and like find a job and make it big. And it's these two characters, Marco and Rodolfo. I want to say right now, everybody's doing accents in this show, which I love, and everybody's doing phenomenal accents, really strong accents. And like, I'm such a stickler for like, cause I love accents and I love voice work and I love like language. So I've got an ear to like really pick up when people are dropping accents.
And nothing takes you out of
it. Nothing takes you out of it more.
Yes.
And the whole cast is like clean. It's really impressive.
Cool.
So the majority of them are doing these Brooklyn accents, and then the Italians are doing thick Italian accents, and it's so good.
It's I really like watching that. It's a little dumb, but it's also funny. This anti-superhero show called The Boys.
Yes, I know it.
And Carl Urban, for some reason, has a very thick, unnecessary Cockney accent.
He does.
And it is just the most jarring thing. Like, it's almost the only thing I don't like about the show.
Oh, for real? I love that.
I do. I hate it so much that I like it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm just like, what are you doing, you madman?
This is thankfully not a Carl Urban performance.
Production?
So strikingly honest in like the performers' accents, but also their physicality across the board. So as it goes, Rodolfo and Catherine start taking a liking to each other, which upsets Eddie, the family like patriarch, who starts to go off a little bit on the deep end as to
and
what he can do.
Cousins,
yeah,
right.
Cousin of Eddie's wife, Beatrice, the mother. So
right, so kind of second, third cousins.
Yeah. It's family, but like. There's some things
not
that are
Game
going
of Thrones,
on. It's not Game of Thrones, but maybe it's sort of like it's by marriage. It's all these kind of things.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's 50s. It's Brooklyn. What are you gonna do?
It was a different time.
A different time. But anyway, so Eddie starts to really start taking a disliking to Rodolfo, and the show becomes this, it starts asking these questions about immigration. It starts asking about like the right to work and what it means to be able to work. There's a really beautiful line about like, because it's also talking about like the cost of living and poverty and all of this. There's a great line that is said when Catherine is asking Rodolfo, like, could we go back to Italy and live there? Because I don't want to live here with Eddie anymore. I don't want to live with my family. And Rodolfo says, what would we do? There's nowhere to work. What, you want to cook the view? And it's like, it's all of this like beautifully poetic language to describe like something that is so tangibly real right now. It's incredibly powerful. I came into both of these shows with a question of like, why now? Yeah. Like, why are you telling this story now? And especially I think with Arthur Miller's A View from the Bridge, because it's written in the 60s, around the same time as he wrote The Crucible, which is his famous like witch play about McCarthyism. And I was interested into seeing like how timely this show would be. And truly within 5 minutes, I was like, got it.
Yeah,
I'm with you. I know exactly why a company like Silo would be doing this as well. And yeah, it's phenomenal. It's so beautiful to see theater with stakes, and not just like any sort of stakes, but like high death and life stakes. Like there is an end to this show that the characters go hurtling towards, and it feels like everybody in the world but Eddie is trying to move hell and earth to stop it from happening. And you feel that. You feel it in everybody's performance. You feel it in the energy of the room that, like, I was leaning forward on the edge of my seat in this show more than I think any other show that I've seen.
Damn, this is sounding good.
It's phenomenal, truly.
I could keep talking about this stuff for a long time. However, I've got 3 minutes until the news. So we might just have to say that amazing sounding performance is still happening.
It's still happening at Q Theatre until the 3rd of May.
Until the 3rd of May.
Plenty of time. I'm probably going to go see it again. Nice. So.
And so we can play. There's a song we're going to play from the next thing.
Yes.
Which we will play after the news. So we can talk about the next thing for 3 minutes.
Amazing.
And then I'll play the song after the news as a little compromise.
Listeners, stay tuned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell me what else.
So I was lucky enough to talk to Meg, who is the performer of the new show at Basement this week called Cellini. This is a show that is a sister show to another piece of work called Helios.
Yeah.
That one was all about the sun. This one is all about the moon.
Huh.
It is reinterpretations, retellings of Greek myth to do with the moon.
Oh, wow.
It is this wonderful weaving of lunar tapestry and storytelling. It is a show that is as much about the performer as it is about the audience, and this sort of ineffable, like, exquisite tie that we have to the moon. And I think right now, like, with all of the, I don't know if you've been watching, but I've been watching the Artemis 2 space exploration mission like a hawk, and this just feels like an incredibly like right moment to be looking at like what we've always sort of felt about this really beautiful, really peaceful celestial body.
I like that. That's enticing.
I was talking to her about it, and I was just so thrilled with everything that she was saying.
It opens this week.
It ends on the 18th, and it's on for 3 nights, which means that it would be the 18th, the 17th, and the 16th.
Saturday. Oh, yes. So it starts on Thursday.
Starts on Thursday, the 16th to the 18th.
Fantastic. All right. I'm going to play some ads and then have some news and such. But there's the song that we can play is from...
Very tied with music, this show. It was like composed at the same time as it was being written. So this show, this music will give you a real good taste of what's to come.
Sweet. Coming up after the news, which is coming up after this break.
Amazing.
Marvelous. Bravo. That was Stage Direction on 95 BFM.